I want to talk about standards that shape the family. This is probably the hardest thing for us, as we've thought a lot about parenting since we've been parents for 22 years, and even before that, we've tried to figure out, you know, how we could do well at it ourselves and how we could help other people. And one of the things we've seen is that the standards that we set actually make a difference. And so what's really hard is to know what are the right standards or what are the best standards. Super, super hard to figure out. And what we've seen is generally parents are producing kids out of their homes who fit the model of parenting. In other words, generally, you're getting the product you're shooting for. So the question might become, what product do we shoot for? So we've seen parents who believe in discipline, and they believe in spanking, and they believe that you should take your kids to church and raise them in a godly environment, and still you look at it, it's like, okay, yeah, but the kids still are not on a good path. What's going on there? It's something other than, oh, that spanking is the magic bullet or something. And I think it comes back to this. What are the standards? And so let me give you an illustration. So we have some friends, the Myers. John, I mentioned him earlier, is our regional director, and his wife is Carol. And we used to go over to their house sometimes, and Carol had a dog, a black lab, not this dog, but a dog that looked just like him because it's a black lab. They all look pretty much the same. And so so I had a lab when I was in high school, and I loved my black lab. We had a lot of fun. He could play frisbee with me. He could catch the frisbee and take the tennis ball, and I'd throw it against the back of our house, the chimney, and it would bounce off. And he would run and grab it and catch it, and he was really good at it. And I would set the ball down, and it would be kind of like a face-off. And, you know, I would one of us was going to go for the ball before the other, and he would try to get it, and I'd get it. And then we would wrestle, and I'd take him down. And sometimes I would get him so angry, he'd be growling at me. And then when I wanted to be done, I'm just like, oh, okay, buddy, okay, let's calm down. Okay, and then I'd pat him, and we'd wrestle and stuff. And so I'd go over to their house, and Millie was Carol's dog. Come on, Millie. Come on. And I'd start to kind of wrestle with Millie and you know, mess up her hair and stuff. And Millie would start to look a little bit playful, like, okay, I could do this. And Carol would be like, Millie, no. Millie, come sit. And Millie would come over and sit and lay down at her feet. It's like, oh, such a sweet dog. And I guess I didn't see this, but someone else was telling me about this. I guess they had like a little bell by their door, that when Millie wanted to go outside, Millie would go over to the bell and kind of hit the bell with her nose, and ding, ding, and then somebody would go and let the dog out. And yeah, it's just so cool. And see, we had these different standards. What I wanted in a dog was I wanted a dog who would wrestle with me and have fun. I still wanted an obedient dog. I don't like it like when you walk into the house and the dog jumps up on you, especially when it's jumping up on company or something. And I don't really prefer that, and Carol wouldn't prefer that either, so we both want obedient dogs. I want a dog that will wrestle and play with me and stuff, but when I'm done, I'm done, and I want the dog to obey then, and Carol wants her dog to obey, but generally, we had different standards, and someone else could have a different standard, and you're like, well, I love that. When I come home, I want the dog to jump up on me, and I think that's really fun, and if guests come over, well, I would prefer that my dog didn't jump up on the guests, but it's more important to me that my dog jumps up and greets me than, you know, it's okay. The guests will get over it, right? But I still want my dog to obey. I don't want him to, like, eat people and stuff, you know? You still have some standards. And so I feel like that's kind of Christianity. It's like we all have our kids and we have different standards. We understand that there's some freedom in that and we can do different things with our kids. And that's okay. There's not a right or a wrong way. But those standards genuinely shape the child and make the children into different people than what they would have become. So that's a little tricky, because I can say, well, and in light of that, my standards are the best standards. You should parent just like me. But someone else could be like, yeah, but I'm not you, and I don't have your kids, and I'm not really shooting for the same standard. So it's a little hard to say, well, you should do it just this way. But yeah, as I look at it, I'll just super honest with you guys. As I look at Christian families, I don't think we have the right standards. I don't. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know you, so you can't even accuse me of saying that about you, because you might be great. You might be the exception. But I'm just saying, generally, as I look at families, even just families in my own church, it's like, I think your dog's a little wild. You know, I don't think these are the standards that we should set. And it's not just a matter of opinion. It truly affects what's coming out of your home, who's coming out of your home. Your standards actually matter and make a difference. So in our church, we... actually, that's the next story. We had offered one time in one of our classes that we were teaching, it just offered, hey, if anyone wants us to just come over and hang out at their house and kind of observe their family and their parenting and stuff, we'd be glad to do that. And so this family invited us over, and we went to their house, and I was trying to change some of the facts a little bit. So if you've heard this before and the facts are different, that's why. So we went to their house, and they had a boy and a girl, and Dad was a little bit late getting there, and so we were going to have lunch. And so Mom was fixing lunch, and we're standing there talking to Mom, and the boy and the girl kind of come running through the house, and we're like, and chasing each other. And it was a really nice house. It was like a marble countertop and tile floors and wood and stuff. And the point of that being, that's a loud house, right? Not a lot of carpet and stuff. And so I have kind of sensitive ears, and so I try to have a pretty high standard on noise and screaming and yelling in the house and stuff. And so she's talking to us just real nicely and real sweet and making sandwiches or something. And they and they come through and then they leave. And I'm like, okay, they're good. They're gone. And then they would come through again, one's chasing the other. He's trying to kill me. And I'm not trying to kill her. We're just playing. And kids, don't play like you're killing. And they would just run back out. And, you know, pretty soon they would come back in and they'd be being loud again. And one of them would go over to the wall and start coloring on the wall, and the mom would look over and be like, kids, we don't draw skull and crossbones on the wall. And then they would run outside again, and then, you know, pretty soon they'd come back in, you know, pointing a bow and arrow at the other one, I'm going to get you. And it's just like, what is going on? This is a nice family that went to church and, you know, later on did youth group and loved Jesus and believed in spanking, and it's like, your standards are wrong. They're just off. And I had to sit and talk with the dad, and I'm like, I don't even know what to say. I know you love your kids, but you have got to tighten up the reins in your family. And he just couldn't hardly see it, because it's like, well, I don't see what's wrong with that. As I mentioned, I try to change these stories a little bit as I tell them sometimes. But my son came up to me after I told this story one time, and he's like, Dad, was that so-and-so? Yeah, it was. He goes, that was the worst day of my life. Because he had to play with those kids while we talked to the parents. And like, okay, well, that's not good. You know, it's not what we want. But what's the right standard? That's what's hard. Is it okay to let your kids yell in the house? Is it okay to be a little loud? Is it okay to draw on the walls? Is it not okay? And, you know, I'm exaggerating on some of that, but there's just that flavor. It's like, we had a wedding in our church, and we have kind of a warehousey type place. And so, you know, when people get married, they use someone else's church and they rent it out. And so we had the wedding reception, and, you know, there's cake and it's, you know, carpeted floor, the short carpet like that. And it was like maybe their original sanctuary type thing, kind of a multi-purpose room that they used while the auditorium was getting built. And so it had a little stage area, and it had a kitchen in the back, and it had a microphone on the stage, and it had curtains on the side. And our church family was, you know, they fellowshiped and stuff, and they ate their cake, and then the kids went, and they played, and they played with the curtains. And to me, it's like, curtains are off limits. There's no need for kids to be touching curtains. You know, they're going to get dirty, they're hard to clean, and they can pull them down, and just don't mess with the curtains. And so that would be a rule of mine, don't touch the curtains ever. There's no need to when you're a kid. And the stage area is just, that's the stage. That's off limits. You don't play on the stage. And the microphone, that's band equipment. You don't play with band equipment. And so I'm watching all our church kids, and they're running up, and they're doing all this stuff. And I'm a bit mortified, and I'm like, oh, I hope the pastor of this other church doesn't walk in. Or the maintenance person or anyone who would realize this is our church, because it's embarrassing. And so you think, well, it's because the parents are caught up in conversation. And so I'm watching the parents. And it was like the parents would be watching, their kid would come up and grab some more cake and then they walk off and play with the curtains. And they're watching their kid, and basically they're just making sure they're not killing anybody, right? And I talked to my church, but you can tell it's just like people don't get it. These standards actually matter. So there's freedom, you can do what you want, raise your kids the way you want, but these standards actually matter. And they actually affect the future of the kids. And so even between Kathleen and I, there can be differences. I grew up conservative Baptist, and you were Southern heretic Baptist, basically, because you weren't conservative. So for us, that we have different standards. And so like when we're in church or at a church meeting or something, you know, one of the kids will kind of, Dad, I need to go to the bathroom. And I look at him, and I'm like, you should have thought of that an hour and a half ago. You know, because it's like, we're at church. You don't get up and leave. You don't open the doors. You don't make any noise. You don't do anything unless it would be okay if everybody else did the same thing. If everybody gets up and goes to the bathroom, is that okay? No. So these are my standards. I know that sounds really strict. Whatever. And so for her, it's like, oh, we just started 2 minutes. Okay. Oh, yeah, it's okay. Oh, and you want to go too? Okay, let's just all head out. And so, sorry, we don't have time to give you the mic to have a counter response, but it's just different, you know. And so even for us, we don't have exactly the same standards, and it is hard to know what's right and wrong. The other thing that gets me is candy wrappers at church. You know, I grew up where you didn't do that. You didn't do candy wrappers at church. You know, it was okay if you needed a cough drop because you're hacking up a lung. You know, and then you could do it, but only if you're hacking up a lung, and even then it was at the risk of eternal damnation, okay? So Kathleen's like, oh, you need a mint? Okay, and then they do this thing, right? And if you're one of those people, it's like, just do it and get it over with, because it's always like, you can tell they're like, and you just want to turn around, but that is not stealth. Just let's be done with this. Just open the candy. So even with us, there are differences. And I still love her. And I hope she still goes to heaven. So we'll see. So I want to think about this. What's God like? What type of God is God? If God was a parent, what kind of parent would he be? I want to talk about two different things. I want to talk about kind of his sternness or his strictness and kind of his love and compassion as well. And so when I think about God in relationship to being strict, what kind of God is he? Is he strict? This isn't just what do I think God is like, but what is God really like? Is he strict? Well, I can start with Adam and Eve. He says, hey, don't eat the apple, whatever. Don't eat the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't do that. And they do. And what's the consequence? Okay, well now you're separated from me forever. Now all the rest of mankind is doomed to hell because you ate that piece of fruit. Wow, okay, that seems maybe just a teensy bit strict. I think of Lot's wife. Remember Lot and his family were in Sodom and Gomorrah, and the angels came to him and said, hey, you know, God's going to destroy the city, and there's the whole conversation about what if there's some righteous people, and basically there aren't enough righteous people to save the city, so God's going to destroy the city and tells them to flee with them and their children and their spouses, and they flee, but the angel says, you know, whatever you do, don't look back. Okay, so picture this, you're fleeing, you know, imagine you're here and you're fleeing, where are the mountains, over this way? Sure. That way, behind me. Okay. Okay, so you're fleeing. This is the city that you've loved and that you've been in for many years. And as you're fleeing, you hear stuff. Maybe you hear screaming. Maybe you hear explosions. Maybe there are flashes from explosions on the mountains. And you're like, man, that's my city. That's where I came from. How tempting would it be to just one tiny, what in the world is going on back there? And that's what Lot's wife does. She turns around like, what in the world? I know I'm not supposed to, but one tiny peak can't hurt, can it? And God turns her into a pillar of salt. Okay, interesting way to go, I guess. Okay, strict or not strict? Okay, strict, yeah. Remember the Ark of the Covenant? You weren't supposed to touch it. Remember Raiders of the Lost Ark? Saw that. And what happens when people touch it? These angels fly out and destroy everybody. I love that scene. Do not touch the Ark. The Ark is a no-touchy. Okay. And so in the Bible, in 2 Samuel, they're carrying the ark. They're not doing it the way they're supposed to. They're supposed to have it with poles, and they have it on this little cart, and they're moving the ark along, and the oxen stumble, and the ark starts to tip. And there's this guy named Uzzah, and he's there, and he's like, oh, no, the ark is going to fall down onto the ground. And he reaches out, and he stops it from falling. Good call. Might be my thinking. God strikes him dead. Why? Because you're not supposed to touch the ark. Now, maybe, that the whole thing might play into it. Well, they were carrying it wrong and stuff, but I'm just saying. Seems like he might be a little bit strict. When I think about the New Testament and Jesus chasing the money changers out of the temple with a whip that he handmade, I think, maybe he could be a little strict. Even Jesus might be a little strict. When I think of Peter, he's like, oh, Lord, not you, not that, that couldn't happen. He looks at him and says, oh, Peter, you don't understand. Let me explain this. He looks him in the eyes, probably his best friend. He's like, get behind me, Satan. I don't know, just seems kind of strict to me. I think about Ananias and Sapphira, who kind of good-heartedly, I guess, sold a field and gave money to the church to help the church, and that seemed like a good thing, but they lied about it, and they said they gave all the money, and they only gave some of the money, and they could have given some of the money, but they lied and said they gave all because they wanted to look good, I guess, and God struck them dead. Maybe a little bit strict. Think about in 1 Corinthians 11 when it talks about communion and taking part of communion in the correct way, and he says that, hey, they're doing it wrong. People are getting drunk at communion. And they're being selfish, and they're getting in line in front of other people, and they're doing this stuff. And he says, that is why many of you are sick, and some of you have died. Wow, okay. Seems maybe a little bit strict. So when I think about the sternness or the strictness of God, I just think God's pretty conservative. God's pretty serious about what he says. He's pretty strict in what he requires. When he sets a rule, he enforces it. He is strong. And I hope I'm reading those stories right. It's not just, here's how I see God, but I want you to think about that for yourself. Is that how I see God, or is that really how God is? I think God really is pretty strict. And so if I think about God being a parent, and I take a scenario and say, okay, well, is it okay to throw Fruit Loops at the breakfast table? I just generally would say, no, I just can't see God's kids doing that. Now, maybe once in a childhood, I could imagine Jesus getting down with the kids and having a food fight or something and just having fun. I could see that once or twice. Maybe. I can't see that a part of normal life in God's house. It just, he's a God of control, of holiness, and I just think he's pretty strict on that type of thing. And so when I think of God with little kids, can I see him having the kids running through the kitchen? I don't see that. Could I see him, just the kids after church, just running crazy and doing whatever they want, not being watched? Maybe I'm just getting old, but I can't see that. I really can't. And when I think about, teenagers, can I picture God telling a teenager to do something and the teenager rolling their eyes and giving him a look? It would be at the risk of being turned into a tadpole. You wouldn't do that with God. God's pretty strict. Okay, so that's one aspect of God. Let's talk about God being loving. When I think about God, I also think about his inexhaustible patience. When I think about Adam and Eve, I think about, well, how he spared their lives. And that wasn't just it. It wasn't like, well, you ate from the forbidden fruit, and so you're going to hell now. It's, well, you ate from the forbidden fruit, and you're going to hell unless I find a way for you to go to heaven, unless I can find a way for you to be forgiven. And that's what the cross is all about. So even in the midst of his sternness, we see this love and this compassion. I think about him covering them with animal skins, killing animals to cover them because they felt embarrassed, where I might be like, oh, you ate from the fruit, and now you're self-conscious, and now you feel embarrassed. Well, you should have thought about that before you ate the fruit. That's not God's heart. His heart is, okay, I understand that. Let me make some clothes for you. When I think about God, I can think about how he treated Cain. Remember how Cain was upset because God liked Abel's sacrifice, and so he was going to, he was upset with Cain, and he punished him. And Cain was kind of worried. Well, first he warned him, said, why are you upset? Why are you angry? If you do what's right, won't you be accepted? If you don't do what's right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. So he warned him. It's like, man, you were about ready to do something really, really stupid. And he did. He went and he killed his brother, even after God gave him that warning. And then afterwards, there's this problem because he just killed his brother, but everybody on the earth at that time was interrelated, right? So there was mom and dad. There were other brothers and sisters. They could have been old enough that, you know, there would be cousins and second cousins. I calculated out one time there could have been like 500,000 people on the earth at the time. There could have been a lot of people at that time. But everybody would be related, right? And so he's like, oh, man, someone's going to take revenge here because I killed their dad or their grandpa or their uncle or, you know, God, everybody's going to be angry with me. What should I do? And I'm really worried about this. And again, I would think God would be like, I warned you. What are you complaining about? But God's like, okay, I see what you're saying. I'm compassionate. I'm going to put a mark on you that will warn people. If they take revenge on you, I'm going to take revenge on them even more. And it was really a loving, compassionate thing to do. Of course, with Jesus, we see lots of love and compassion. I think of Jesus washing Judas's feet. You know, just, you know, shortly before, Judas is going to betray him to a painful death. I think, well, that's pretty compassionate. I think of Jesus and the woman at the well, who had 5 different husbands and was currently sleeping with someone she wasn't married to. And I read through that story, it's like, man, you treated her so compassionately. So cool. And I think of the woman who's caught in the act of adultery and how Jesus just so cleverly got rid of all these people who were accusing her and gets them all to go away. And then he looks at her and he's like, woman, where'd everybody go? Where are your accusers? She's like, well, they've all left. Well, then neither do I accuse you. Go and leave your life of sin. What an awesome, perfect, compassionate response. So compassionate. I love that story. And so, and then we can take it all the way to the cross. You know, you have this crowd of people that chose to crucify Jesus instead of this murderer. And they begged to let the murderer go. And then they yelled out, crucify him, crucify him. That's what they wanted to happen to Jesus. And so here he is hanging on the cross with legions of angels at his disposal. At any second, he could have just sent them down to take him down to destroy everybody. And he's hanging there. And he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. In other words, you guys are clueless. Have compassion on them, Father. Wow. Okay, what kind of parent is that? Well, I think that's a pretty compassionate parent. Someone who really understands humans and our need to be loved, our need to be shown grace and forgiveness. I think when Jesus' child flushes a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle down the toilet, because he's sending him back to the sewers where he came from. I'm thinking God says, hey, don't do that again, but I love you and I forgive you and it's no big deal. I'm thinking when when God's child goes out and takes the shovel and tries to do his parents a favor and he shovels off the car. True story. I'm thinking God again is just like, hey, maybe next time, don't use the shovel on the car. But there's a compassion there. I'm thinking when God's child crawls up on the table and dumps out the whole box of cereal, God's like, hey, don't do that. Maybe you get a spanking for getting up on the table. You shouldn't have done that. But not a big deal. It's compassion, and he's loving. So we need to understand both these aspects of God's character. Romans 11:22 says, consider, therefore, the kindness and sternness of God. Sternness, those who fell, but kindness to you, provided that you continue in his kindness. In that passage, what we see is both these aspects of his character. They're both part of God. And as parents, both those things need to be true of our parenting. We can be very loving and compassionate, but we also need to be very, very stern and strict and firm. We can discipline and still be compassionate. Those things are not exclusive. We need both those things. We need to imitate our Father. And so we need to value the behaviors and the character that God values. I think it's easy for us to value things that are very different from what God values. Like, we could not value being strict. But even in the behaviors of our children, sometimes we don't care so much that our kids are holy or that they're godly, but we kind of want our kids to be cool and to fit in. Parents, I think one of our greatest struggles is that our ultimate goal is not to have children who are godly, but children who make us look good. And so it's just really easy for us to value the things that the world values. You know, the world values attractiveness and athletics and achievements and academics. And if our kids can excel in one of those or all four of those, then that makes our kid look really good. And it's easy to want that. And not only does that make our kid look good, it makes us look good. Versus if we think about raising kids who are really godly and holy, you know what that might do? It might make you look bad. You know, when you're talking to your friends, you're like, hey, yeah, my kid went to Bible Bee this year. Not cool. It's just not. And so we've got to be really careful with that. I'd like to show a video to you guys. This is a kid from El Paso, and that's part of why that's cool. But I just like this kid and just a little snippet of who he is and what he's like. And I want you to think about what is it you're aiming for with your children. So let's go ahead and watch that.
And I know you guys get tired of me. It's little things.
Coach Peter Morales of the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, makes no qualms about it. He has a favorite on this team.
Mitchell, I need you. I need you to help me out with my coaching tips, Mitchell.
Team manager Mitchell Marcus has a developmental disability.
One, two, three, burn!
And he far surpasses everyone here when it comes to love of the game.
He's this amazing person that our basketball team loves being around.
Yay! Mitchell's mom, Amy, says he's always been that way.
Mitchell always had a basketball. That was always what he wanted for his birthday.
And because basketball is that important to him, on the last game of the regular season, the coach told Mitchell to suit up.
What was it like to put on the uniform?
I was very happy.
I imagine you were.
Just wearing a jersey was enough for Mitchell. But what he didn't know, what no one knew at the time, was that the coach planned to play him at the end, no matter what the score.
You were prepared to lose that game?
For his moment, yes. For his moment in time, yes.
And so, with a minute and a half left, Coronado leading, but only by 10, Coach Morales put in his manager.
And just started hearing Mitchell, Mitchell.
But here's where the fairy tale fell apart. Although his teammates did everything they could to get Mitchell a basket, each time they passed him the ball, he either missed the shot or, like on their last possession, booted it out of bounds, turning the ball over to the other team with just seconds left.
He wasn't going to be able to score. But I was hoping that he was happy that he was just put in the game.
Could you have ever imagined what happened next?
No, I didn't. I could not. Not at all.
What happened next happened on the inbound. The guy with the ball there is a senior at Franklin High School, number 22, Jonathan Montañez.
I was raised to treat others how you want to be treated. Just thought Mitchell deserved his chance, deserved his opportunity.
I think I'll cry about it for the rest of my life.
What Jonathan did was yell out Mitchell's name, then threw the ball right to him, right there. One of the most memorable turnovers of all time. It wasn't the game-winning shot. When the buzzer sounded, Coronado had 15 more points than Franklin. But Jonathan's assist and Mitchell's basket did change the outcome decidedly. Play any game with this much sportsmanship. Both teams win. Steve Hartman on the road in El Paso, Texas.
When I first saw that video, I just honestly, I mean, it sounds kind of judgmental, but I saw Jonathan, I thought, it sounds so mean, but he looks a little bit geeky. Just a little bit geeky, just maybe not the coolest kid at school. I thought, man, I'd be so proud. That was my kid. And we want to be really careful that we're not aiming just for a kid that fits in and that's, you know, the coolest kid. And I think a lot of Christian parents aim for that. And you know what? Most kids just cannot be that. Most Christian kids are set down a course that they can't be Tim Tebow. Just most people aren't that, where they're really good at athletics and they're smart and they're good looking and they got everything going for them. And we put so much effort into them excelling in all those things, but are we putting effort into them being godly? So Malachi 2:15 says, has not the Lord made them one in flesh and spirit? They're his. And why one? Because he was seeking godly offspring. That's what we're aiming for, is godly offspring. We need to value that because that's what God values. We must embrace God's ideals as our own. On page 29, you should have a handout that just has some standards, really. So we talk about standards. It's like, hey, there's freedom, and you can do whatever you want with your kids. And to a degree, that's true. But there's also a degree which God has actually called us to some pretty high standards. So if you look at that, we see that our kids should honor us. We see that our kids should be obedient. Our kids should be respectful, that they should be believers, that they should not be wild, that they should be bring peace into the home, that they should be on a good course, set in the path that we have set them in, trained to do what's right. They should do what's pure and right in their conduct. They should be righteous, doing what's right. They should be wise and not foolish. They should be well-versed in the commands of God. They should be trained in instruction. They should be sensible, self-controlled, and sober-minded. They should be submitted to those who are older. And they should be under authority. And so, yeah, there's a degree to which there's freedom and you can parent how you want and what you think is best for your kids. But there are also some really high standards that God has called all of our kids to. And so we need to be parenting in such a way, we need to set standards in such a way that those standards are producing this kind of a child. It's like Millie the dog. Well, you could train him this way, or you could train him this way, or you could train him this way. Hey, there's some freedom in that, but this is our end goal. And how we train the kid is actually going to impact whether they end up like this. So our standards actually matter. And that's where I look at it, and I think we need to have more conservative standards. I think that would be really good. I think it would be helpful in producing a godly child like this. But that's my thought. Your call as a parent is, what path can we send them down that we think will produce this in our children? We must use our authority to shape our kids. On this, I had this phrase in my mind. It's like, don't be afraid to pick up the mantle of parenting. You ever have an English word or something that you think about? It's like, is that a real word? And I was thinking, oh, mantle, what's mantle? I'm thinking like fireplace mantle. It's like, what does that even mean? And so I was thinking about that, was driving, and I went home and I looked it up. And it's kind of cool. It's actually from the Bible. And it's from when Elijah was giving over his place of authority to Elisha. And this is what it says. It says, as they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and of horses came and appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up into heaven in a whirlwind. Cool story. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them apart. He picked up the cloak, and the word for cloak there is mantle. So mantle means cloak. He picked up the cloak or the mantle that had fallen from Elijah and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the cloak or the mantle that had fallen from him and struck the water with it. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? He asked. When he struck the water with it, it divided to the right and to the left as he crossed over. And so basically it's like he's picking up Elijah's place of authority. This is the same cloak that he had put on Elisha earlier when he called him to be a prophet. And Elisha had just asked for a double portion of Elijah's spirit, and he just received this. And so he's basically taking up Elijah's place. He's picking up the mantle, and he's walking across it, and this is the first time he's going to do something. And Elijah had parted the water earlier. He grabs the cloak, and he's like, pow, and boom, baby, there it is. And he goes across, and he's just taking ownership of this thing that God had just given him. And I think we need to do that in parenting. God has called you to be the authority in your kids' lives. God has called you to raise your kids in a certain way. And there's freedom in that, but he's called you to raise them to be godly and to be all the things that we just looked at. And I want to encourage you guys, pick up that mantle, pick up that cloak, take that responsibility that God has given you. Don't be afraid to be the authority in your kids' life. God has called your children to obey. It's your responsibility as a parent to help them obey. Hebrews 12:9 says, moreover, we've all had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. How much more then should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. And it's basically saying, hey, we need to submit to our heavenly Father just like kids are supposed to submit to their earthly father. Don't be afraid to be the authority in your home because God has made you the authority. And so that's what I want to end with. I want to encourage you in that. God has put you in this spot, and he's instructed you. He's given you all these verses that we've looked at, and now you need to figure out, okay, exactly how do I implement that? And you walk in that, and you love your kids, and you train them, and you discipline them, and you set them down a course. You figure out where it is you're going. And then you do everything you can to take him in that direction. So we're going to pray and close off, take a break, and we'll come back and do some Q&A time. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time here. And just pray, God, that you would just bless with the rest of our Q&A time. God, I thank you for just all the wisdom you've given us in raising our kids. We wouldn't have come up with some of this stuff on our own. We some of these ideas are just so wild compared to how we think. And so we thank you for giving us your wisdom and pray, God, you would help each one of us in applying the things that you've taught us. Help us not to be overwhelmed. Help us not to be discouraged, but to have hope that hey, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Things might be really rough right now. We may not be doing everything just right, but there is hope, and that's what your scripture offers, is a different path, a different ending of the story. And that's what we want to walk in. So we thank you for that. Pray you would help us to find that path you've laid out before us and to live that out in our families. Help us to be an encouragement to one another, support to each other as we try to raise godly kids in our church. And we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.